The Athletic.
Honestly, the best moment of my life. There's no words, mate.
Qatar pulled. Day 7 at the World Cup. Who can beat the Mexicans? Messi can, as he saves his side from failure. Elsewhere, the big story is Australia, who beat Tunisia by the seat of their pants and meanwhile already through a France. We round up all of Saturday's action and look ahead to Sunday with the next big side on the brink, Germany. It's Totally at the World Cup, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. Right, day 7, listener. Hello to you on our Totally. We've got Michael Cox and Dom Fifield. Hello, guys.
Hi, James.
Hello. Also joining us later, Samantha Lewis on the Socceroos and Raphael Honigstein on what's coming up for Germany. But yeah, nice to see you, Dom and Michael. We've not spoken since the World Cup began a week ago. What have you made of it so far, Dom?
Well, I've enjoyed it from afar. I think the football's been really interesting. It's, you know, obviously you get slightly obsessed with the England thing just because that's what you largely I've been covering. But it's been nice to watch the French in particular and to see some of the, you know, the subplots of the World Cup. It's great group stage. It's always intriguing. I'd like to know what it's like out there, mind. Part of me wishes I was out there experiencing the World Cup firsthand.
Michael, tell him negative things about the Qatar experience so Dom will feel better.
I mean, it's a mad world. It's quite chaotic. I've gone through several emotions since I've been here, but I think the overriding one is just a sense that this really is one of the maddest things that's ever been organised. Really, I mean, it's just the scale of things and the construction of these stadiums that are really only designed for this 4-week period. And the number of people that are here, and, you know, at the England game yesterday, there were 70,000 people just absolutely in the middle of nowhere, just in this kind of ghost stadium in the middle of the desert.
Right.
It is quite bizarre. But, I mean, the unquestionably good thing about the experience is you can go to multiple games in a day, and lots of people have been doing that. So in that sense, it is quite a unique World Cup. It almost feels like more like an Olympic Games than a World Cup, if that makes sense. Mm. It's all in one city. It's people going to games that they're not necessarily as invested in as you might expect for a World Cup. They're kind of just going because it's down the road and you can go. But yeah, it is quite a weird world, I think it's fair to say.
Okay, you went to both games in Group D today. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent. All right. Those Group D games in full. Australia beating Tunisia 1-0, with later on France with a 2-1 victory over Denmark, which makes the world champions the first team through to this year's knockout stages, and also the first reigning champions to qualify for the next tournament's knockout stages since 2006, which is crazy. Now, elsewhere in Group C, and I think this is where we're going to start, you had Poland beating Saudi Arabia 2-0, and this evening, Saturday evening, Argentina also with a 2-0 win over Mexico.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Pelota para Leo. Messi al arco. Goal! Goal!
There you go, Argentina 2, Mexico 0. My mum always used to tell me not to leave a messy room, and now Mexico know why. What did you make of him stepping up to seize destiny in his little fingers?
Well, he wrote the script, didn't he? It was pre-written for him, perhaps. He struggled through most of the first half, but then, you know, Argentina was slightly better after the break, slightly better, slightly more urgency to them. And Herrera, I think it's Herrera, just leaves him for a split second, almost like he's trying to catch a breath. He looks up and Messi's actually stayed still, whereas Herrera's continued his run towards the edge of the box, and Messi has this little pocket of space that he exploits, and it's still an incredible finish. I mean, it's an absolutely fantastic but trademark finish into the corner, and I think it actually hits the inside of the side netting. It's just beautifully, beautifully placed. But yeah, I mean, the outpouring of emotion and relief really around that stadium amongst the Argentinian support and the team was palpable.
Mm. They seem to kick it up a gear or two, Argentina, after that.
Yeah, I think so. The first half was so scrappy, wasn't it? I mean, I know Mexico are not a South American side, but it reminded me of the rare times when I do watch one of those South American World Cup qualifiers, and it's just not that much football played. It's just all in the midfield. It's all scrappy. It's all aggressive. I think there were two or three shots in the first half.
Right. Lowest combined first half XG of the tournament, 0.28. 16 fouls in the first half between Argentina and Mexico.
Yeah, that sums it up. And afterwards, I thought it was just really about individual quality. I think Argentina just have the better players, and the more there was space for them, the more that paid off. So yeah, I must say, I tend to watch games hoping there'll be a bit of a surprise, a bit of an upset, but deep down, I'm not sure I wanted Argentina to lose and go out here. I do want to see Messi in the final stages. I do want to see how that plays out. So, yeah, I was quite pleased Argentina won this, I must say.
How much is Messi the face of the tournament out there, Michael?
Not particularly, I would say. I haven't seen him particularly prominent more than other players. There seems to be a bit more hype and attention around Mbappe, I would say. I think he's seemingly regarded as the new best player around, and it's kind of played in quite an entertaining way. And I think Neymar, in a broader sense, I know he's got injury problems at the moment, but I think there's a sense with Neymar that this is more important to his kind of legacy. I think regardless of what happens for Messi in this tournament, he'll be regarded as one of the greatest of all time. I think for Neymar, it could be the kind of difference between him being seen as a player who didn't quite make the most of his potential, and if he was to win it, as one of the best players of this generation. So, no, I haven't seen that much of Messi, actually. I mean, even with Ronaldo, obviously there's the speculation around his transfer. So it feels like Messi's, in a way, playing fourth fiddle to those players.
Interesting. Well, he opened the scoring here and certainly put Argentina on their way. How about Enzo Fernandez's goal, though, Dom?
Yeah, lovely finish. Again, just given a bit too much space and curled it in beautifully into the top corner. But at that point, I mean, I didn't see Mexico scoring. It felt a bit like that all night, to be honest. They were very frantic and they pressed all over the pitch or tried to, but they didn't have any cutting edge at all. And you know, actually, the more and more I see of Raul Jimenez, it's slightly painful watching these days, remembering what a good player he was not that long ago. And obviously, he had his injury problems and he just doesn't look the same. And they always looked a bit lost in the end. But I mean, the whole thing was very panic driven. It was laced with panic throughout. But as Michael says, the little bits of quality came from Argentina.
Well, so much pressure on the Albiceleste with this prospect of crashing out of the tournament, of Messi's last tournament, if things had gone badly against Mexico. Mexico did have the odd kind of glimmer of a possibility, of a chance in the first half. With that goal, with this win, do you see them flourishing, blossoming into a proper contender?
They got that potential to do that, yes, definitely. I can see them winning the group. I can see them beating Poland in their last fixture. Then they go into that second phase, that the knockout, with confidence, with belief, and with a bit more momentum behind them, I guess. I think it, when you've been on a 35 unbeaten run, I think it doesn't take an awful lot for the confidence to come flooding back, I wouldn't have thought. And it may be that game against Saudi Arabia will be looked at in a complete isolation. In a couple of games' time, we'll be looking at a real Argentinian team that's pushing forward and allowing Messi to express himself properly.
Michael, do you see a contender in that side?
Yeah, I do. In a way, I don't think they've done that much wrong throughout this tournament, really. I mean, they haven't conceded many chances at all. I thought Saudi Arabia just took two opportunities brilliantly in the first game. But I do think they look relatively solid. They're growing into the tournament. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but quite often the eventual winners start quite slowly in the group stage. I do think they're in good shape. The only thing I'd say is they are depending on individual magic in the final third. I mean, maybe they can get goals from set pieces or kind of other slightly unglamorous sources, but I don't see that much level of attacking interplay and cohesion in the final third. But yeah, defensively, I think they look relatively strong.
Okay, they're currently in second place in the group on 3 points alongside Saudi Arabia. Poland topping the group right now with 4. Mexico with just the 1 at the bottom. Mexico will face Saudi Arabia in their third match, and even a win may not be enough to see them through to the knockouts. Ooh, let's talk about Saudi Arabia and what they did this Saturday against Poland.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal five players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScoreBet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org. We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Saturday afternoon, Poland 2, Saudi Arabia 0. Zielinski with the first for the Poles, the second from this man.
Lewandowski jest! Ma to pierwszą bramkę w finałach Mistrzostw Świata! Ma, trafił, kapitan Robert, jest ten gol!
Wow, emotional scenes after that. Big Lewandowski, his first World Cup goal ever. He said afterwards, because you probably saw this, he collapsed on the turf and was like prone there for a bit, just taking it all in. He said, it's difficult to explain why my emotions were so strong, but I've been dreaming about this since I was a child. Not sure if he dreamt that Saudi Arabian era, which, you know, set him up so nicely to break his World Cup duck, but a nightmarish stuff, of course, for the not quite the host, but neighbours of. Yes, what did you make of Poland?
I thought it was more about Wojciech Szczesny than the Poles, the Lewandowski at the other end. That double save from the penalty and the second save in particular, more than the first, were absolutely unbelievable. And for him to have kept two clean sheets, I think he's the only goalkeeper to have kept two clean sheets at this tournament so far. It was staggering. Really, really, really brilliant reflex action to push the second one away. And then, yeah, I mean, when they beat the press, they did what Argentina couldn't do in the first game. The first goal in particular, with a slightly longer, more direct approach, beat midfield and they got in behind that way and it worked.
Matty Cash to Lewandowski, who couldn't quite control it, but then was able to turn and fire it back to the oncoming Zielinski, and that was 1-0. And then the second goal, as we mentioned, from Lewandowski himself. Saudi Arabia with a sort of a taste of their own medicine after, no, against Argentina. Argentina had all the shots, but Saudi had two chances or three possibly and scored both of them. This time they had 20 chances and lost 2-0. And Poland, who saw a penalty saved from Lewandowski, in their first game against Mexico, this time with, as you say, Dom, Szczesny doing the same for them. That was at 1-0, wasn't it? So that was a big moment for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before halftime, had the Saudis drawn level, then you know they might have carried more of a threat in the second half. Still more belief, certainly, going into that second period. But I can't underestimate it. It was absolutely astonishing, the second save. I mean, it's all very well saving a penalty, fantastic, but then to actually get up and push the second attempt over the bar, well, yeah, fair play. Didn't do that in his Arsenal days, didn't very often, did he?
Wojciech Szczesny then, and Poland topping Group C. Let's get on then to Group D. Group D, everybody, has got Denmark and Tunisia on 1 point. In second place, Australia on 3. And topping the pile, France with 6 points and already through to the last 16. France beating Denmark today 2-1. Michael, you were there.
I was, yeah. I'd say maybe relatively typical of games at this tournament, in the sense the first half wasn't that interesting and the second half opened out a lot. But France were the better side. They were quite exciting, I thought, throughout the game. Whenever Mbappe or Dembele get the ball, you just feel like things are going to happen. I think Griezmann as well is playing his role quite well. I think he has to play a bit deeper because there's essentially three attackers in the side. But I also think there are some question marks about France. I mean, it's quite rare they've played with three real attacking players behind a main striker, as they're doing here. The last World Cup, they had Matuidi, who was kind of tucked in from the left side and offered more defensive balance. And I did think at times Denmark just got at them quite easily. And as exciting as they've been, I do sense that at some point Deschamps will introduce another central midfielder, probably at the expense of Dembele, which would be really harsh on him because I think he's had a really good tournament so far. But he is a safety-first manager. And I think against the real big boys, when you can't afford any slip-ups, it feels to me like France will take a little bit of a backward step.
Wow, that would be a shame to see him go out of the picture. As for Qatar's very own Kylian Mbappe, what did you feel about his performance, Dom?
Oh, he was irresistible, as he has been in both the games, to be honest. The couple of goals that he's scored have taken him to 7 World Cup goals, and bearing in mind he's 23 and he's barely played in the tournament, in 2 tournaments, that's pretty good going.
Do you know who's the only other player to reach that total before the age of 24? Go big.
It's Pelé.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. Pelé.
Not bad.
He's got 31 goals for France. He's 23 years of age. This is Mbappe we're talking about. The next highest scorer for France at that age in history was David Trezeguet. He had 16. Mbappe on 31. Sorry, Dom, back to you.
No, look, I mean, the numbers, they reflect how good he is, really. It's only Just Fontaine who scored more for France at World Cups.
It's Just Fontaine. You don't need to say only in that case. Anyway.
When's kickoff in the next game? Right. So he's quite decent. But I agree with Michael as well. I thought Griezmann was tremendous in a slightly different role to one that he's used to playing. That was his 26th assist for France. Apparently he's level now with Zinedine Zidane in that stat table. Going forward, they're frightening. Usman Dembele was superb on the right, really tormented the Danes all evening. And it would be a shame if the conservative nature of Deschamps comes through and they bring in, say, a Fofana into midfield to sit alongside Tchouaméni and Rabiot for the knockout phase. But, you know, they're not bad guys to throw on. If you threw on a Dembele late in the game to stretch it, I think it would be fairly difficult for tiring opponents in the heat to deal with.
After Mbappe's first goal, Andreas Christensen equalised for Denmark. Some felt he should have been off already at that point. Dom, no?
I didn't think so. I thought there were two Danish players on the cover, and he was still quite a long way out. I know we look at Mbappe, and we know that Mbappe can burn through and has got that pace to take him away from a back line, but he was so far out. It was a very cynical foul, but it was probably quite a good foul for him to commit at that point.
The journalist sitting next to me watched the replay of that and turned to me and said, "How on earth is that not a penalty?"
Where was the foul, Michael?
Well, it was a good 20 yards outside the box.
Right.
I'm not sure she was suggesting a change to the rules. But, I mean, it kind of does make sense. When it's such a cynical foul like that, it should be more than a yellow card. There should be a stronger punishment. Because at the end of the day, the defending player is taking the yellow card. And if the punishment for the crime is kind of worth taking, it's not rewarding good football, is it?
Right. People often make the inverse argument that a lot of fouls in the penalty box aren't really worthy of the penalty of whatever the XG of a penalty shot is, but pretty much a goal. So if you want to take the automaticness of the penalty for a foul in the box, maybe you want to assign it to really egregious bits of play outside it. But anyway, that's one for Arsene to consider for next time around. You were saying about how, like many games, this one was a bit slow in the first half. How about this? We've now had 24 games at this tournament. Exactly half of them have been goalless at half time. And only about 30% of the goals scored so far in Qatar, which I make 57, only 19 of those have come in the first half. What do you think the reason for that might be?
I'm not sure. I'd be interested to see a comparison with other World Cups. I feel like international tournaments in general can be a little bit slow to get going. And I feel part of that is probably the fact that all the games are played on neutral ground. I think when you don't have one side who feel kind of compelled to take the initiative, sometimes you can get a bit of a standoff. And I must say, one of the disappointing things about this World Cup has been the atmosphere, really, and the lack of people in the ground. And, you know, if we go back to a couple of years ago when games were played behind closed doors, and I think everyone agreed there was a little bit of a sterile feel about them, it's not quite that level. But it does feel like teams are kind of playing their way into these games. And I think there's another issue as well with that, you know, these teams only had a week's preparation. Most of them didn't have a pre-tournament friendly or two to get in the groove. And at times it feels to me like the first half almost has been the pre-tournament friendly and teams are really kind of just gradually warming up. The second halves, I think, by and large, have been very good. I know there's been a couple of games that finished 0-0. But yeah, the first halves in general, I think if you'd skipped all the first halves, you wouldn't really have missed too much in this tournament so far.
On the subject of atmosphere, the Lusail Stadium with Argentina-Mexico this evening sounded absolutely amazing. France, though, this game against Denmark, anything but a gimme, given what the Danes had done to France of late, beating them home and away in the Nations League, not least. So with this performance, what does that tell you about their role, their prospects for this tournament?
Well, psychologically, it is important and significant for France to have overcome the Danes. As you say, I mean, I think it was the last time France beat them in a competitive game was way back at Euro 2000. So they've broken through that barrier now. It will do wonders for their belief. I thought it was quite significant also that Raphael Varane got 75 minutes of that game, because there is a suggestion and a feeling having out there that they've got a bit of a soft underbelly. They haven't got the N'Golo Kante figure that they had at the last World Cup. The centre-halves who started the first game, I think, had 9 caps between them going into that match. So having a Varane figure coming back into the side and hopefully rebuilding his fitness after the hamstring trouble with United is also significant for Didier Deschamps. But I mean, he's in a position now, a rare position, where he can almost rest players for that last game, because they've pretty much won the group now. It would take something pretty remarkable for them not to go out as group winners. So maybe we'll see Varane get a bit of time again, but other players, some of the fringe players, maybe Fofana in there in midfield as well, just getting a run out.
There you go. 3 big points for France, qualification, and as far as I know, no big injuries this time around. They are on 6 points in second place and now needing just 1 point from their final game against the Danes to be through to the last 16 are Australia, after they defeated Tunisia. A quite remarkable result for the Australians. Joining us now to give us some perspective on what it means to that nation is ABC Australia's Samantha Lewis. Samantha, thank you for joining us. First World Cup win since 2010, first clean sheet at a World Cup since 74. How were you at the final whistle?
I was beside myself, I have to say. I was in tears. A lot of other Australian journalists were in tears. Graham Arnold, the head coach, was in tears. The players were in tears. It's a really important moment, this win, not just for the stats that you just mentioned, but also just in terms of the culture around Australian football at the moment. This Socceroos team has been through so much over the last couple of years. They had to really struggle through their qualifiers. They played the majority of them away from home due to COVID restrictions and lockdowns. They spent weeks at a time in hotels. They had to go through the intercontinental playoff route in order to get here at all. So the fact that they're here in itself is kind of miraculous, given everything that they've had to struggle through. But to now get this win under their belt, and the way in which they won it, I think is what is really special and is something that is going to stay in the sort of collective memory of football fans in Australia for a really long time.
Mm. You're now a point away from the last 16. Among the things that will probably be in that collective memory for a while, Mitchell Duke's extraordinary header.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a, of all the Socceroos players, I'm so deeply joyful that this moment is for Mitch Duke. Mitch Duke has a story that really encapsulates, I think, not just the Socceroos, but Australian football in general. He's 32 years old. This is his first World Cup, a World Cup that he never thought he would ever make it to. He comes from a big family in Western Sydney and has been doubted his entire career. The only person that has really shown faith in Mitch Duke has been Graham Arnold. He was the first coach to cap Mitch Duke at the professional club level at the Central Coast Mariners in the A-League. And he brought Mitch Duke into the Socceroos fold at the start of their qualifiers. And he's now emerged as one of the team's top scorers. And now with this winning header, he has gone down in history as just the 8th male Australian to score in a World Cup. He is the complete embodiment of the fight and the fire and the resilience and the determination that all of these Socceroos players have in their own kinds of ways. So for him to have this moment, to be able to share it with the people around him who have helped him to get him to this point is incredibly special.
Mm, including his young son in the stands we were seeing on TV. It was an extraordinary header. Tim Cahill, I think, would have been proud. What about Harry Souter with his last-ditch tackle as well?
Oh, my gosh. That tackle is going to stay in my mind for the rest of my life. I actually, in my analysis piece off the back of this game, I open it with that tackle because it said so much about this game and so much about the identity of this Socceroos team. It's the 85th minute. Kai Rolls, his centre-back partner, loses the ball in the bright sky of Doha, and Tunisia look to be off and away. But Harry Souter, all 6'7" of him, just barrels across the field and makes this incredible last-ditch tackle to sweep the ball clear and to charge back up the field. It said so much about what this Socceroos team is, who these people are, what they stand for, which is has always been this underdog mentality. It's been this never say die kind of philosophy. It's been fighting until the absolute bitter end and even further than that if your legs can take you there. So Harry Souter being able to do that in just his third start since tearing or recovering from a torn ACL, you wouldn't have known it. He was an absolute man mountain. And Jackson Irvine, his teammate after the game, said that it was one of the best performances he's ever seen in a Socceroos jersey. And I think a lot of people who watched that game can probably agree. Souter was just phenomenal.
Well, it was magnificent. Now, though, the Socceroos have to do it all over again in the final group stage game against Denmark. You need a point. Funnily enough, the last World Cup group that you were in, 2018, was also with France and Denmark. The only point that you got in that was against the Danes. How do you feel about this time?
Look, I'm quietly confident. Now that we've seen how we can play and the kind of fight we can show against the Tunisian side, who are incredibly well-disciplined defensively, who are really capable of breaking forward in transition and attacking the areas of the Socceroos that we always thought were vulnerable, and are able to come away with a win, I think is incredibly galvanising, not just for the group of players, but also for the community who sort of came into this World Cup really doubting that the Socceroos would be able to do anything, considering all the stuff that they had been through and considering that really since the golden generation of players, you know, your Harry Kewells, your Kim Cahills, your Mark Viduka's, nobody really knew who these Socceroos players were. But this win against Tunisia, I think, really reminded the country and reminded the world of what this team stands for and who they are. So coming into this game against Denmark, I think there is absolutely a quiet confidence now around camp and around journalists and around the fans of the Socceroos that we could potentially get something from it. And the fact that we are going into it with our destiny in our own hands, needing either a win or a draw in order to get through to the round of 16 for just the second time in our history is incredibly exciting.
Samantha Lewis of ABC Australia. Michael, you were there in the vicinity of Samantha and presumably a whole coterie of Aussie journalists. What was it like at the final whistle?
Yeah, it was good. I think I was actually sitting behind Samantha. We've not met before, but I think she had a bit of a moment at full time, as a lot of the Australian journalists did, because I think they came to this tournament probably with not great expectations. And I must say, it felt like an away win in terms of the style of the performance, but also just in the fact that Tunisia, to me, seemed to have more fans here than any other nation. I mean, they made an incredible noise throughout that game. And the way Australia won it with a headed goal in the first half and then a bit of a backs-to-the-wall performance in the second, it almost felt like an away kind of Champions League win, if that makes sense. You know, not a technically brilliant performance, but in terms of doing the basics right, you know, their penalty box defending, the way that Aaron Moy played, the work rate of their forwards to get back behind the ball and make it difficult for Tunisia to break them down. They were really impressive, actually. I must say, I came into this tournament almost writing Australia off because, you know, look at their squad. It's not a great squad for Australia's standards. You look at the way that they qualified, they really squeezed through in the playoff. But I thought they started well against France in the opening game. And in this game, I think by the end, they deserved the win because they really denied Tunisia any clear-cut chances.
Mm. For anyone who didn't see the goal, by the way, I say it was a header, but it was more than just a header, Dom?
It was fantastic because the cross is actually deflected, so that some of the pace is taken off it almost.
And well, he also sets the manoeuvre up, doesn't he? When he leaps in midfield and does a deft touch to find a teammate and then bombs up, about 40 yards upfield to be in time to glance it in off the back of his head.
Yeah, slightly more than the glance, wasn't it? Because he managed to get enough power on it, and as well as the angle and the direction. It was fantastically guided, I suppose, but awkward for him to have mustered that both the direction and the strength onto it. But yeah, fantastic finish and lovely celebration as well with the J for his son up in the stands. I don't think he saw him, did he, himself? But his son was certainly gesturing J back to his dad.
Mm. Touching scenes, and all of Australia getting misty-eyed then. They still got to do it against the Danes. What do you think? Can they get a point against Denmark?
The thing about Denmark is that they do everything really well until the final third and the lack of a striker. They're still relying on a fella that was bought by Cardiff City when they got promoted in 2013 up top and got sold before the end of that season, I think. I mean, they went through all their striking options tonight and didn't really come up with somebody that was going to lead the line efficiently. But I suspect the Danes will cause Australia problems on set plays and stuff like that, and that might end up seeing them edging through. But it is a... You know, where Denmark had unruffled the French in the Nations League, you know, the French were all flamboyant and the Danes just were resolute and strong and industrious, and little flashes of quality from Eriksen unlocked the French ultimately. This is going to be a meeting of two teams that are both industrious, are both strong and physically up for it. And it's, you know, that I suppose will give the Australians heart that they may just cancel each other out.
Mm. All right, well, that game is coming up on Wednesday, as is the other third round game in that group. Let's talk though next about what awaits on Sunday in groups E and F.
Now, incredible game. When they play with a false nine, it changes everything.
A false nine, eh? What's that then?
Well, it's you know, it's what he's a nine, but he's not really a nine in the area. Sorry, I just got to take that.
Urgent football question? Call the Athletic Emergency Football Hotline. 0800 0433 433. News, insights, analysis. The Athletic. Know the game, love the game.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Sunday's action. Group F versus Belgium taking on Morocco at 1 o'clock UK time. Morocco, who drew with Croatia in their first game. Belgium, who were lucky to get past Canada. Croatia and Canada will be facing each other Sunday afternoon at 4. A game for which John Herdman has already done Croatia's team talk for them by saying Canada are going to F Croatia. The Croatian press haven't taken too kindly to that. Neither did the Croatian manager, etc. We'll see how motivated Croatia will be, probably quite a lot, on Sunday at 4. Group E, meanwhile, sees Japan up against Costa Rica. That's the early game. Can Japan follow up their incredible Germany win? What state will Costa Rica be in after that 7-0 spanking from Spain? A win will take Japan through to the last 16 if Germany failed to beat Spain, because that's the other game in Group E, Spain against Germany. Perhaps the most highly anticipated group stage matchup of the entire 2022 World Cup, particularly after what happened to Germany in their first game. Lose this match and the Germans will be out. And we've got Raphael Honigstein for quite possibly the last time on this show, this tournament, on the line. Raphael Honigstein, hello.
Hello, James.
Hello. Raphael, let's see. You're beaten by Japan, teammates attacking one another, bogey team Spain up next. If we had to construct a worst-case scenario for Germany's next World Cup game, this would be pretty much it, right?
It'd probably be Italy at the World Cup. But yes, it doesn't get much worse. Flick said the situation is bad. He admitted that, but he was putting a brave face on, saying that he's optimistic, that Germany can play well, that they can be full of confidence. But yeah, it doesn't make for the most suspicious of preparations, I think.
No, I do not. Post-game, after the Japan match, you had Gundogan and Neuer amongst those, saying that not everyone had been showing for the balls. Some didn't want the balls, said Gundogan. Who were they talking about?
They never specified names. I think they were referring to the players ahead of them. So the likes of Müller and Havertz and maybe Musiala before he came off. According to Havertz, he felt that some of the criticism was constructive, that people didn't take it personally, that nobody was angry in his words. But there was a frank exchange. And I think there's a lot of potential for things to go bad if indeed they have a bad game, because there is clearly a little bit of finger pointing going on. It's down to Hansi Flick to make that all somehow come together. I noted that Oliver Bierhoff, the Germany sporting director, said the situation is not like 2018 in the sense that there you had a real split and a disunited dressing room. He felt it wasn't the case, that the team spirit was good. But I think that will be tested tomorrow, especially if they were to have a poor start. I can see things going quite badly very quickly.
Mm. And of all the opponents, as I say, Spain. Can you explain the context of why Spain is such a bogey team for Germany?
Well, Spain stood in Germany's way when Germany was still very good at this tournament business. In 2008, they beat them in the final of the Euros. In 2010, they beat them in the semifinals of the World Cup. In this year's Nations League, or last year's Nations League, beat them 6-0 in Seville in one of the worst games of the late Jogi Löw era. And the overall record is not great, the Germany's. So not a side that they traditionally tend to do well in. Having said all that, I think Spain are still a bit young, are still a little bit inconsistent. You've seen the results, you've seen the performances over the last couple of years or so. Work in progress under Luis Enrique. And maybe Germany, if the stars align and everything kind of works for them in the way that it didn't in Japan, have a chance. But I don't think it's a particularly good one. So I would personally sort of give them maybe 20% chance of winning this game.
Okay. So one last thing then, Rafa. If Spain have this incredible record against Germany, you haven't beaten them in a competitive clash since Euro 1988. If Spain looked brilliant in their opening game and you guys didn't, why might Germany defeat Spain?
They might defeat them because they create lots of chances. That's not a problem. Yes, there's no centre forward of top class, but we have enough forwards who do great things. Jamal Musiala was very close to scoring one of the goals of the World Cup history, probably. And I'm sure we'll play again pretty well. I think Germany defensively should hopefully be better. And Spain, as I said, their results are a little bit indifferent relative to their talent. They're a little bit young. I don't think they're used to not playing without the ball. Germany will try to get the ball off them and see if they can do to them what Spain usually dish out to others. And let's see. I think you need a lot of sort of situational luck in the game. You know, things have to break the right way. Germany need to get the right decisions by the referee, need to get the right moments of luck or bad fortune for the other side. And then maybe it can happen. But I think the proposition of having to beat Spain in the second game of the World Cup in Spain, they can kind of afford almost to lose, but certainly a draw is a great result for them. Makes it even harder for Germany.
All right. Well, we've certainly seen some plucky underdogs pull off upsets in this tournament already, Rafa. Maybe it'll be Germany's turn this time.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Raphael Honigstein. Well, as the Germans would say, the cow is very much on the ice for Hansi Flick's side right now. Du hast die Kuh vom Eis geholt. Hey, Michael. What do you make of Spain, by the way? The big score of the opening week, that 7-0 victory over Costa Rica. Was that the opponent, do you think? Or this Spain team, are they something special?
I think they're a good side. I think of all the teams in this competition, to me, they feel most like a club side in terms of the cohesion they play with. And the impressive thing about them, and I don't really know whether this counts for anything when it gets to the latter stages in terms of who wins, but it feels like they can just bring in players and take out players, and they pretty much play at the same level and in the same way. And I do think there is something impressive about that. So yeah, I think it was partly the opponent. I think Costa Rica fell apart. I think when you look at the stats as well, it was a bit of a freak scoreline. 7 shots on target and 7 goals, I think, which you're not usually going to get against Kiel or Navas. But they're obviously in a really strong position in this group, as are Japan, because not only have they inflicted a huge shock on Germany, they're now playing a side who seem a bit shambolic. And I'm not really sure how good Japan were, because I think they were very much second best in that first half against Germany. But that is the nature of the World Cup. You can have one result that doesn't go how you expect, and the entire group turns on its head. And it's great, because this group seemed probably like the most predictable group coming into the tournament. I think we all expected Spain and Germany to get through it relatively easily. But that's very much not the case now. And yeah, for Germany, it's a knockout game, effectively, just 2 games in.
One reason why Spain might be so cohesive is the fact that they've called up a block of players from one club, Barcelona. I think they have 8 Barcelona players, which I'm quite surprised that other managers haven't maybe gone down that route. But I guess it helps when you have a Barcelona with a La Masia, etc., within your nation's precincts. Spain setting World Cup records for possession and successful passes in that clash with Costa Rica. Dom, their passing map looked like a Jackson Pollock. Is that just group stage madness, and then later on when the chips are down?
we'll find out. We'll learn a lot about Spain in the Germany game, I imagine, more than we did against Costa Rica, which ended up feeling a complete mismatch. But I think, yeah, with the emphasis placed on Germany to get a result, I think, yeah, there will be a proper test for how good Spain actually are. This time tomorrow, we'll know whether they're proper contenders or not.
Excellent.
Well, it's interesting you say that about the possession and the passes completed, James, because usually, I mean, in Opta definition, those are the same things. You know, Opta's possession statistic is just calculated by the share of completed passes. But now we've got this contested possession stat has come up on our screens. Have you discussed that before?
No, we've not. I don't know why not. Isn't it right that now the possession is based on the amount of time on the ball?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I believe you're right. And I've had a few people complaining to me. I don't know why to me, as if I'm responsible for it, but about this contested possession thing. But I kind of get it. I mean, if the goalkeeper launches the ball long and it's bouncing around in midfield and no one's getting the foot on the ball for 10 seconds, I agree that's not possession for either side. And it's not possession. It is something which is basically just competing for the ball. So I quite like it. Although I do quite like it because it clearly has wound people up, which I think is a quality in itself.
Well, there you go. By the way, that exciting German phrase that I was using that I only learnt today, which is why I was so keen to get it in. That's what when a crisis is averted in German, you say the cow is off the ice, and you can see why that would be regarded as a crisis in the making. Get the cow off the ice. Phew, we can all relax. So there you go. Will Germany get their bovine, etc., asses off the and all that? We'll find out, as you say, Dom, this time tomorrow. We'll know the answer to that and loads of other questions, and the good thing is there'll be a Totally Football Show to round up all of those answers for you. But I think that brings us to the end of today's edition. So many thanks to Dom and to Michael and to Samantha and Rafa and producer Charlie, and of course, listen, I was just getting to you as well. Do join us Sunday night or Monday morning if you prefer, and we'll round up some more World Cup fun together. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad free on the Athletic app, discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube, and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.